810 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A week and a day until Election Day, but more than 41 million Americans have voted early, including President Biden in Wilmington, Delaware today. He was asked about the Trump rally at Madison Square Garden on Sunday.
It's simply embarrassing. It's beneath any president, but that's what we're getting used to.
Trump's campaign seeking to distance itself from the jokes told by a little-known comic before Trump took the stage. One line that Puerto Rico is a floating island of garbage. An investigation today of fires in two early ballot boxes in Portland and nearby Vancouver, Washington State, an incendiary device found inside. Philadelphia's district attorney is suing Elon Musk and his political action committee over his controversial $1 million giveaway for registered voters. McDonald's Quarter Pounders are being brought back to the menu in most locations where they were taken off over E. coli fears linked to onions. World Series Game 3 in New York tonight. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. For 910 WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. All eyes are on Wisconsin with the election about a week away. Vice President Kamala Harris, former President Donald Trump, and their running mates, Governor Tim Walz and Senator J.D. Vance, are hosting campaign events in the tightly contested state this week. On Wednesday, Vice President Harris is scheduled to visit the University of Wisconsin-Madison for a Get Out the Vote rally. Also on Wednesday, former President Trump will host a rally in Green Bay with former Packers quarterback Brett Favre. Trump will also speak in Milwaukee on Friday. Beginning this weekend, members of the public can test the electronic voting equipment for the November election. The testing is meant to give residents confidence in the election process by showing them how the machines work and how long the process takes. Under Wisconsin state law, any anomalies found with the electronic equipment during the testing period need to be fixed before the equipment can be used for the election. Members of the public will be invited to observe the testing process with at least 48 hours of notice. A Duluth woman was killed in a rollover crash in Carlton County on Saturday afternoon. According to law enforcement authorities, 41-year-old Rebecca Ann Peterson was traveling north on Interstate 35 near County Road 61 when she lost control of the vehicle and went off the road. The vehicle then struck a number of trees and came to a rest in a wooded area off the road. The accident occurred at around 3 p.m. on Saturday. Law enforcement authorities say no other vehicles were involved in the crash and Peterson was wearing a seatbelt. The driver who crashed into a power pole in Ashland and temporarily knocked power out in the area has been arrested for driving under the influence. According to Xcel Energy officials, about 1,100 customers in Ashland lost power as a result of the late-night Tuesday crash, and extensive damage to the pole kept that section of Highway 2 closed for hours. According to the Ashland Police Department, 59-year-old Terry Weaver was taken to the hospital for treatment following the crash and was later charged for driving with a revoked license and OWI. For 910 WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers stopped the Jaguars.
Hi,
I'm Mike Clemens with Sports. The Packers with another come-from-behind victory, beating the Jaguars 30-27 with a winning field goal after Jordan Love had to exit the game with a leg injury. Running back Josh Jacobs took over with 127 yards rushing on 25 carries, scoring two touchdowns. But Jacobs says the offense could have done better.
I felt like we should have closed the game out. I felt like we should have executed better. I felt like it shouldn't have been that type of fight at the end. But being able to be in that position and still come out with a win, I think it's speaks volumes to this team.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers now 5-3 after losing to Penn State 28-13 Saturday night. Up next, the Badgers head to Iowa to play the Hawkeyes. NBA, the Bucks losing to the Nets in Brooklyn 115-102. Milwaukee now 1-2 on the season after losing the home opener to the Chicago Bulls. Head coach Doc Rivers asked if he needs to address the team.
It depends how you pitch your spots. And we got to get right first. You can yell all you want. If you're not playing right, it doesn't matter.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Becoming breezy today with winds whipping out of the south up to 30 miles per hour. It'll bring along with it a few spotty showers overnight. High temperatures today will hit the upper 60s, and by tomorrow it leaves us under mostly cloudy skies with highs still unseasonably warm in the low 70s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 64.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail, and someone offers you a way out.
Just plead guilty, and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash Bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Donald Trump was in the great state of Michigan, my birth state, and he insulted Detroit.
Our whole country will end up being like Detroit if she's your president.
You're in Detroit, man! I would tell you, sir, we would only be so lucky if we had the mentality of people trying to do better for their cities, for small businesses moving in. There's a renaissance going on in the city of Detroit.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Mary Hayes is the chair of the Shawmigan Democrats for Bayfield and Ashland Counties. Going to get a little update with her. We will wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing? Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As ever, and it seems like every day now, we have an incredibly jam-packed show for you. Very special guests from front to back. We're going to kick off the day with Jeff Mandel, the General Counsel of Law Forward. He knows a ton about elections, a ton about protecting the franchise and voters' rights. We're going to talk to Jeff at 2:30, as it is Monday. I'm going to be joined by the Center for American Progress Action Fund for their regular segment. My special guest today from CPAF is Maya Ives-Ruble. She's the Senior Director of the Disability Justice Initiative at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She's one of the most widely known disability justice organizers in the U.S. As evidence of that, she was the founder of the Women's March Disability Caucus, so that should be really compelling. For this episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money, I'm joined by Karen Stewart at 3 o'clock. She is a patriotic millionaire herself, and she is a former operator of 4 elderly residential care facilities and a financial planner. We're going to dig in with Karen. Very excited. And of course, because it's Monday, we've got In Case You Missed It with Dom Salvia, my friend that has a great show that follows mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. But folks, I got my business done today. I got my early vote in. I got my sticker on. Oh, it fell off. Those don't stick very well, do they? And it didn't take me that long. I was really excited. I was in and out of there in under like 20 minutes. Got my early vote in the bag today. I felt a palpable sense of relief, y'all. I was like, okay, that's done. I don't have to have that like top of mind every day. Like, when am I going to get this done? What I can say to you is look at your calendars. Day-to-day life is busy. It's messy. And we seem to run out of time. That is at least my problem. I don't know about you. My schedule just feels packed every day. So I had to look at my schedule for this week and Monday and Tuesday next week and be like, where do I have an hour or two, maybe even a little bit more, to make sure that I get my vote counted? And I got it done today. I suggest you do the same. Look at the next 7 business days. Make sure that you have a couple of hours set aside. Talk to your boss. Every Wisconsin worker is entitled to at most 3 hours on election day, so on next Tuesday on November 5th. But make a plan. And then ask all your friends and family, do they have a plan to vote? Because that's what it is all about with that. Oh, one last thing. Do not forget that Civic Media has got you covered when it comes to all of your voting logistics. You too should be a voter in 2024. If you need more information, of course, you can always go to myvote.wi.gov. But we've got you covered too at civicmedia.us/vote. And because we got new maps in Wisconsin and we've got races up and down the state assembly and Senate, we've got you covered for that too. Our political editor, Dan Schaefer, put together a comprehensive guide for every single Senate and assembly race occurring this November. You can check that out at Civic as well at civicmedia.us/voter guide. Now, with all of those good introductions and business out of the way, I'm very excited and happy to bring my guest and friend back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jeff Mandel, General Counsel of Law Forward. Thanks so much for making time, Jeff. It's always great to see you.
Thanks for having me, and congratulations on voting today.
Oh, thank you. Again, there is a palpable weight off my shoulders. I can't even tell you. Whew! Jeff, we got 8 days until the election. What are you seeing in terms of early voting, since we're talking about that?
Well, we're seeing that early voting is up across the state. I think that lots of voters share your feeling, Maggie, that they are enthusiastic to vote in this election and that they want to get it done so that it is not hanging over them for the next 8 days, the next week, until Election Day. And so in all parts of the state, in all counties, we are seeing numbers that are significantly up for early voting. And any listener who wants to vote between now and Election Day has that opportunity and should go and take advantage of it. And then it's one less thing to worry about next week.
Absolutely. I've heard a lot being made of Republican early voting. And I because now Donald Trump has fully embraced it. Almost every speaker that took the stage at the racist, misogynistic, homophobic, nativist, fascist rally yesterday at Madison Square Garden told people to vote early. I don't know. What's your take, Jeff? I don't care if Republicans are early voting. It's just go out there and vote. I've always been pro more people voting. That's a good thing to me. That's democracy in action. Your reactions to some of these estimates of how the early vote is breaking down.
Well, I'm with you, Maggie. We want all eligible voters to participate. Our democracy works best when all of us are doing it together. And Wisconsin traditionally has very high voter participation rates compared to our neighboring states. We are usually first or second in the country for voter participation. And so I'm thrilled to see early voting up in all parts of the state. Everyone should vote.
Yeah, that, to me, that's always been the bottom line. It's funny, though, Jeff. Seems that only one party is concerned and adopting all kinds of new restrictions on voting. And it's odd, but we can deal with that tangent in a minute. But let's keep it to brass tacks, Jeff. What do people need to know as they prepare to vote? What's changed from the last presidential election, if that's the last time some of the folks out there have voted?
Well, the big change since the last presidential election is that we're not in the middle of the COVID pandemic in the same way.
Right.
And so there's a lot less to be worried about in terms of going to vote in person, whether that's in person early or in person on Election Day. And as you noted earlier, you know, voting is easy. It is pretty simple in Wisconsin. You do need ID. And if you vote early, you can vote at any early voting location within your city or town or village. If you vote on Election Day, you have to go to your assigned polling place. And you can find all of that information on those locations at myvote.wi.gov. And it sounds like you can also find them on the Civic Media website, which is a great resource. So people should check and make sure they have the right kind of ID. The other thing that every listener should know is that here in Wisconsin, we have same-day voter registration. That's not true in most of the country. So if you are not registered to vote, or if your registration is out of date because you have moved, you can fix that at the polls. You can show up for early voting or on Election Day, and you can register to vote or update your registration, and you can vote right there on the spot.
Folks, that is Jeff Mandel. He's the general counsel of Law Forward, a law firm here in the state of Wisconsin. He's been thinking and working and litigating about these issues for a very long time. So happy to have you. If you have a question for Jeff or I, 855-752-4842. And an incredibly important thing that you just mentioned, Jeff, I wanted to give it some re-emphasis, if you will. And that is, if you are early voting, or if you've received your ballot in the mail, you can turn in your ballot that you received in the mail. You don't have to mail it back. That's thing one. Thing two is, if you want to early vote in person, you do not have to go to a particular place in your jurisdiction. You can go to any of the polling places for early voting in your jurisdiction. If you vote on November 5th, you have to go to the right place to vote, and you have to look that up if you don't know what it is. But right now, again, if you go to early vote, you can go to any of the polling places within your jurisdiction where you are a resident that they have open to the public. You can check out what those polling places are, their hours, all that good stuff, again, at myvote.wi.gov. Last time we talked, drop boxes seem to be quite the controversial item. We had a mayor carting off one. We had a sheriff in Dodge County seemingly intimidating clerks into not using them. What's the status of drop boxes right now, Jeff?
Well, drop boxes are, as we talked about last time, they are legal. And they can be used in Wisconsin. They've been used for decades. They are safe and secure. They are convenient for people. And what we saw in the last couple of years was a brief period where the courts said that drop boxes were illegal, but they'd always been legal under Wisconsin law. Wisconsin law hadn't changed. Just this one judicial decision did. And now drop boxes are legal again. As we discussed a couple of weeks ago, Maggie, that led to a couple of hiccups in implementation. There have been some figures around the state who are anti-drop box or are very skeptical about drop boxes. But I think that that's really behind us now. And those municipalities that are using them, I think, are finding success. And if any listener who is in a municipality that is using drop boxes should feel completely comfortable and secure depositing their ballot in an absentee drop box, which allows them to return it at any time of day or night.
And where does this situation lie, Jeff, with those two smaller villages in Wisconsin that had been sued by the Department of Justice for their refusal to use brand new voting machines that they had purchased? Where is it in those two jurisdictions right now? Where does it stand?
Sure. Those are two small towns in Rusk County up north. One of those towns, the town of Lawrence, settled with the United States Department of Justice and has resumed using electronic voting machines for those who wish to use them. And the other, the town of Thornapple, had to be sued by the Department of Justice. But there was a federal court injunction, that is an order entered, and we fully expect the town of Thornapple is also making electronic voting machines available to those voters who wish to use them.
Folks, that's Jeff Mandel, general counsel of Law Forward, a law firm here in the state of Wisconsin that's looking out to preserve your right to vote. We're going to have more with Jeff when we come back. Your questions and comments, as always, are welcome. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Robinhood is introducing forecast contracts so you can trade the presidential election. Through Robinhood, you can now trade financial derivatives contracts on who will win the U.S. presidential election, Harris or Trump, and watch as contract prices react to real-time market sentiment. Each contract you own will pay $1 on January 8th, 2025, if that candidate is confirmed as the next U.S. president by Congress. Learn more about the presidential election contracts on Robinhood at www.robinhood.com/election. The risk of loss in trading commodity interests can be substantial. You should therefore carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your financial condition. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Commodity interest trading is not appropriate for everyone. Displayed prices are based on real-time market sentiment. This event contract is offered by Robinhood Derivatives, a registered futures commission merchant and swap firm. Exchange and regulatory fees apply. Learn more at www.robinhood.com/election.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Central Heat, you know, the HVAC systems that heat your entire house. Man, those can really cost us an arm and a leg. And they lose up to 30% of their energy through the ductwork, plus more when we're heating rooms that we aren't even using. Well, one trick that can bring down your heating bill is to lower your thermostat and use energy-efficient space heaters where you really need the heat. I'm a little retro, and I like radiant heaters. Those are heaters that just heat a specific area in a room. On average, running a 1,500-watt space heater is going to cost you about 20 cents an hour. While running your central electric furnace, that's going to run you $1.37 an hour. So space heaters can mean real savings. However, if you use a space heater, make sure you follow the directions for their safe use. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. The next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You may like listening to me on the radio, but if you'd like to watch all of my This Is Why I Don't Play Poker faces, you can check it out. We stream live all day long. All your favorite talkers you can see on the Civic Media YouTube channel. And folks, if you want to watch me actually light my hair on fire on Twitter, Insta, and the Book of the Faces, that is all at Maggie Dawn Show. Check us out there as well. We have got Jeff Mandel from Law Forward joining us for this first half hour to kick off this last full week before the election. We got 8 days to go. Please make a plan to vote. Sit down, look at your calendar, decide when this is going to work. Maybe even have a plan B about when you're going to vote. And just don't assume it's going to be on election day and you're just going to slip in and out. Because it's going to be busy, very, very busy. Historically, folks, just for a frame of reference or a point of reference, the beginning of the day on voting day on November 5th and the end of the day is usually when it is most crowded. But I got a sneaking suspicion that it is going to be jam-packed all day long on November 5th, which leads me to this question, Jeff. We've had listeners sending me pictures of guys hanging out outside drop boxes, just sitting there watching them. We've heard a lot about potential shenanigans that the Trump campaign and its volunteers may try to pull on election day. We've heard that there are over 100 lawsuits that have been brought, most already losing or in the process of having their evidence-less claims vetted by courts, but there's litigation going on coast to coast. Again, most brought by the Trump campaign. How are you feeling? What's your sense as a lawyer as we go into this election process about election administration and whether or not election officials are going to follow the rule of the law and do their duty?
Well, I actually feel great about this election here in Wisconsin from an administration standpoint, Maggie. We have a system in Wisconsin where we administer our elections on a local, municipal level. It's unique in America. This is not how most places do it. But part of what that means is that it's our own friends and neighbors who supervise our elections. And there is something special and great about that. It means that the people who are there when we go to vote, who are taking care to make sure that our vote is cast and counted, are our friends and neighbors. They are people who care about us. They are part of our community. And the other piece here is that, as you say, there is a lot of election litigation, and we've had a ton of election litigation in Wisconsin over the past 4 years. But I actually think that puts us in better stead than we had been. It has clarified some of Wisconsin election law. It has brought to the fore to make sure that we have consistency across the state and that these different municipal clerks and municipal election officials are administering our elections in the same way so that the same rules apply no matter where in the state you vote. And I think that all of your listeners can be really enthusiastic about voting, knowing that we have safe, secure, free, fair elections here in Wisconsin, and this one will be no exception.
I have such confidence in Wisconsin election administration. Having seen it up close and personal, I have been a poll observer. I've been a poll worker. I obviously worked for Milwaukee County during the recounts, and going, everything is going to be just fine here. Every single person, Republican, Democrat, independent, and don't really ever vote. You're going to vote this time. You can feel confident, safe, and secure and going to cast your ballot wherever you may find yourself in the state. I wanted to ask you two things. First, before I do that, just a couple more resources for people out there listening. You've got other questions. You think something like not good is happening. You're worried about voter intimidation, or you see someone in a polling place giving incorrect information out. You can call 1-866-OUR-VOTE. That's 1-866-OUR-VOTE. That's staffed by the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights. They will help you. They will take your information. They can help you with voting questions. Another great resource is a group called Vote Riders. You can find them at voteriders.org. That's Vote Riders, like a ride or die.org. If you need to, you're not sure if your ID is going to work. And these are organizations, again, this number and this website, you can find it and use it anywhere in the country, not just in the state of Wisconsin. I wanted to ask you a question, Jeff, because a few listeners have reached out to me, be like, what is up with that? And isn't it illegal? And this is the Elon Musk, like, million-dollar giveaway, Jeff. Like, my understanding was that this seemed pretty clearly illegal under federal election law. What's your take, Jeff? What's going on here?
Well, it's pretty clearly right on the edge. Yeah. And just to make sure everyone is on the same page, Elon Musk has a petition that he's asking people to sign about how they value the First and Second Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. So that's freedom of speech and the right to bear arms. And clearly the implication that Mr. Musk is trying to make is that if you value those things, you should be voting for former President Trump, just like he wants you to. And what he's doing is he is offering cash to any registered voter in one of the seven swing states in the United States who signs the petition. But you're not signing that you're going to vote. You're not signing who you're going to vote for. You're just signing a petition. And you are a registered voter. He's not paying you to register, and he's not paying you to vote. Paying people to register and paying people to vote are against the law. This seems to be, as I said, right on the edge. But the United States Department of Justice has expressed significant concern about this, especially after it went from a flat fee of first $47 and then $100 mm-hmm. for each person who signed to then, well, every day we're going to pick somebody at random and give them $1 million. I believe yesterday it was someone here in Wisconsin who was chosen for that $1 million. And the U.S. Department of Justice has notified Elon Musk that it thinks this is illegal and it's looking into it.
Yeah, scary times. Very briefly, we got less than a minute, Jeff. When should we expect results in Wisconsin, given how tight the race is?
It takes time to count the votes. We should expect unofficial results sometime on Wednesday, sometime, you know, probably around breakfast time, but it might take a little longer. Remember that in 2020, we didn't know until Saturday, and those are still unofficial. We don't have official votes that have been checked and rechecked and rechecked all the way up to the state level until the end of November.
Folks, that's Jeff Mandel, General Counsel at Law Forward. When we come back, it is time for my discussion with the Center for American Progress Action Fund with Maya Ayavez-Ruble. She is a disability advocate. Keep it locked. We're going to talk about voting for
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin has a new national FFA officer. I'm Pia Bianchi with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Monday. And we'll introduce you to this FFA member from East Troy next.
Farmers, let's talk Pioneer brand 4-seed Enlist corn.
Yes, Coach!
Wow, love the energy. Okay, it clobbers corn rootworms and weeds for higher yields.
Yes, Coach!
And 4-seed Enlist delivers next-generation corn rootworm protection.
Yes, Coach!
Plus powerful exclusive genetics and flexibility to manage tough weeds.
Yes, Coach!
Now get out there and
grow!
I guess being a Pioneer agronomist is like being a coach.
Start your best year yet at pioneer.com/rootworm.
As the National FFA Convention drew to a close on Friday in Indianapolis, a young woman from East Troy, Wisconsin, assumed her role as the new Central Region National FFA Officer. Her name, Mary Schreiber. She said it wasn't a role that she saw herself playing until late in her high school experience.
I grew up without a lot of agriculture experience, and for a long time I really perceived that as a weakness or something that I should hide. But eventually this agricultural community and this national organization really encouraged me to use that perspective and those experiences to my advantage, because within this organization, every experience and every perspective is valuable. And it took me, I always say, sort of an embarrassingly long time to realize that value in my experiences. And the love I have for this industry is because of the people.
That's Mary Schreiber from East Troy, Wisconsin, the new Central Regional National FFA Officer. You can find out more about how the convention wrapped up in Indianapolis at FFA.org.
At Wiffles Hybrids, we like to speak in metaphors. For example, when it's seed decision time and you're at that fork in the road and time is money, you might want to choose a partner that's a little more underdog, a little more David than Goliath. Because you deserve a family-owned company that marches to the beat of their own drum, whose product lineup and customer service is the whole enchilada, the whole ball of wax, the whole kit and caboodle. Wiffles Hybrids. Plant your independence.
And the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation is partnering with the Badger State Sheriff's Association. Their goal? To try to make sure that people recognize the critical issues of mental health in rural communities. According to Brad Olson, president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, they hope this partnership will be part of extending their farm neighbors care message to rural areas. They say the partnership will also give county sheriffs a little bit more access to resources for those who may be facing mental health struggles, including farmers, veterans, and children. You can find out more at WFBF.com. That's a look at food and fiber news on a Monday. I'm Pam Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Becoming breezy today with winds whipping out of the south up to 30 miles per hour. It'll bring along with it a few spotty showers overnight. High temperatures today will hit the upper 60s, and by tomorrow it leaves us under mostly cloudy skies with highs still unseasonably warm in the low 70s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 66 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
Vice President and Director of Marketing for Versity, Gretchen Jameson, is with us.
When you donate blood, there's a couple of different products, if you will, that your blood can produce. There's whole blood. You can do platelets every 2 weeks. You can be a double red, which is what you do.
Yes. For me personally, whatever I can do to maximize my gift, as you say, is worth it.
So you can go to Versity.org and take a look at all the different ways to donate and give.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Matt Flynn joining us. This is a text off the text line. Quote, I'm dreading that it's a little too late. The last few weeks of polls are extremely bleak.
This is not the time to get wobbly. The polls right now still show her in the lead between 2 to 3 points. She used to be ahead by 5 points. So what?
Charles Franklin at Marquette Law School says polls don't vote. People do. Have a plan. Be a voter, Matt.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm joined by Ian Teal from the Wyweega Film Festival. And Deirdre and Stephen Starry drop by the studio to talk about the 125th anniversary of the Brown County Historical Society.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Monday. It is 2:30, and that means I'm joined by our good friends at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Very special guest today. Her name is Mia Ives Rubley. She's the Senior Director for Disability Justice Initiative at CPAT. AAF. I got to get the acronym right. One day I'll get all of the alphabet salad correct all the time. The Center for American Progress Action Fund. She is one of the nation's foremost disability justice advocates and organizer. She founded the Women's March Disability Caucus. Thank you for that, Mia. She's also worked on disability justice and inclusion with several progressive organizations, including Families Belong Together and DC Action Lab. Thank you so much for making time, Mia. It's a real pleasure to have you this afternoon.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for asking to have me on.
Absolutely. There's lots that is scary about Project 2025. It's scary for women. It's scary for people in the LGBTQIA community. But it's also scary for people who advocate for disability justice. Tell us a little bit about what Project 2025 is proposing to do that would make life so much more difficult. And frankly, some areas of life may be inaccessible for folks with disabilities.
Most definitely. You know, I think that what people should realize is that Project 2025 basically takes a wrecking ball through all the established structures that actually help disabled people be able to stay in their community, live, work, go and get an education, and have a fulfilling life. And so, you know, when we looked at sort of the document, we took sort of a fine mesh comb through all of the different parts of the Project 2025 document, and where we saw the most interesting sort of attacks and sort of the ones that would have the greatest impact on the disability community include within the education sphere, within healthcare, within employment, social benefits that disabled people rely on, and just the general enforcement of the Civil Rights Act that was passed in 1990 by a conservative, the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah, it is. Just to recap, there's basically not an area of U.S. law or regulatory system as it relates to disabled folks that Project 2025 does not basically promise to dismantle. We're talking about access to transportation. We're talking about educational access and equity. We're talking about workforce protections. It's all of those. Mia, if we could start a bit about the attacks on ensuring access to education, because I think that one is going to strike right at the heart for so many of us. Have kids, have family members, have good friends that need the protections that the Department of Education helps enforce and helps investigate.
Yeah, so the education part is particularly interesting. And I think much of the work that was started with Betsy DeVos in the previous
administration. Yes.
And what we saw was basically the deregulation of education across the United States. And there are a couple of different laws that particularly impact the disability community, including the IDEA and the Rehab Act. Those are two of the, you know, leading pieces of legislation that help ensure that disabled people are able to access free and accessible education, particularly within the communities that they live in. Before those, a lot of times disabled people were put in these separated schools. They weren't allowed to be educated amongst their peers. And these laws actually ensured that individuals with disabilities were able to receive a general education that was on par with everybody else. And so what Project 2025 does is, one, it makes it so that it is very unclear that IDEA and Rehab Act would actually apply to education as a whole, because what it does is it actually takes all of that education funding from the federal government that comes from the Department of Education and puts it into these special individualized education funds that are run by quote-unquote nonprofit organizations. And that becomes a question of, okay, these laws specifically target federal spending. So if you put it into subcontracts, are these individuals required to abide by the same laws that they were required to when it was just general funding to states to go into funding of schools? So that's a major question of, will it actually cover you when you are going to these sort of privatized school systems that are going to be basically what it says is no strings attached.
Yeah, it's really scary because it's not just privatization of education, which the movement to do this is long. It ties back to Jim Crow. It's a way to segregate schools, right? But it's not here. It's the privatization, not just of general education, but it's the privatization of where the funds go that is specifically to assist special needs and special education.
Correct.
And that is so almost in a standardless way. Like, that is what's being proposed in Project 2025, as well as basically making coordination virtually non-existent. Like, the Department of Education exists for a whole gamut of reasons. One is consistency of application, right? Ensuring that all students, all young people get access regardless of their differing abilities or needs. And when you start to siphon off the funds, give it to private organization with very little to zero oversight, and it's different buckets of funds going to different organizations, it basically will create chaos with very little oversight. Or am I overstating? I mean, when I looked at it, I went,
no,
oh my goodness.
You are not overstating it. And one of the things that Project 2025 does is it actually takes all of special education and puts it into ACL, which is for community living. And that ensures that there is absolutely no coordination between the quote unquote special education, which again is just going to be now a grant that has no strings attached, meaning there's absolutely no oversight on it. So they could utilize those funds for however they want, and could be reallocated to other things other than just, you know, special education. And, you know, it means that they're not coordinating with the rest of the programs that are intended to ensure that students generally get the same education.
Yeah, that, again, it is so brazen and shocking and yet utterly unsurprising at a certain level. If I'm going to summarize this, when you look at Project 2025 as it relates to special needs education and what we've all now come to expect, individualized educational programs or IEPs, basically it just takes all of that completely off the board. It's a wholesale privatization and intentional fracturing of the entire federal regulatory and funding system that assists children with special needs to access fair and equitable education. Period. Point blank.
Right.
And if that wasn't enough, Mia, I'm so offended by the fact that there is a presumption that specialized schools for the deaf or blind are going to be basically be defunded.
Yeah. Yeah. These are programs and schools that were established because in the beginning there was no education for the deaf or blind individuals. And these programs are essential, one, because you know, the deaf community in and of itself is a community of people that have established connections across the United States through these universities, created their own unique culture, and have provided a lot of opportunities for not only deaf people, but non-deaf people, non-blind people, by providing education that allows them to go into specific sectors of that community to provide services like interpreting. And so, you know, Gallaudet is one of the leading schools that help teach interpreters how to interpret.
Oh, well, we should definitely, like, defund that. As just a small tangent, Mia, and I'm sure you're aware of this factoid, I just read that it was reported somebody did a deep dive into the campaign disclosure of their spending, and it was fascinating to me that the Harris-Waltz campaign has spent tens of thousands of dollars on interpreters for various events, and the Trump-Vance campaign has spent $0. What was your reaction when you read that news, Mia?
You know, it just shows how, you know, one thing that I love to hear is, you know, people talking about the budget tells you exactly what your priorities are.
What your values are.
And that specifically shows where their priorities are. They have no prioritization of actually doing outreach to the disability community, and it shows.
Yeah, it's to me, if we can be completely politically transactional about this, which I don't like to be, because everyone, every human has innate dignity and should have access to education and a fair workplace and transportation to get them to their doctors and grocery stores and houses of worship. But on a purely transactional political perspective, Mia, it strikes me as so sickening because conservatives have people that they love too that have special needs and that are disabled. And that seems to be of little to no concern because the agenda is not about how does government serve all of us and every American. It's about implementing and then sort of solidifying a very narrow Christian nationalist exclusionary version of fascism, you know, posing as democracy. It's just, I don't understand it. It's like, oh, yeah. It's not just liberals and progressives that have people with different needs in their families. When you're
exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah. One thing that I want to note is that the disability community is actually getting bigger. We've seen a 10% increase since the beginning of the pandemic. That means that everybody everywhere knows somebody with a disability, whether they're willing to identify as disabled or not. And so that's partially due to things like COVID. It includes aging. It includes issues with the healthcare system. And so to not actually develop a strategy to ensure these individuals are able to, one, stay in community, to be a part of this economy, is short-sighted.
It's very short-sighted. I think about, again, being part of the economy. If you're a purely capitalistic driven person, hey, we've got incredible talent here. Folks, this is my very special guest for today's segment with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Her name is Mia Ives-Ruble. She's the senior director for their Disability Justice Initiative. She's one of the nation's foremost disability justice organizers. We're going to come back and we're going to talk more about what Project 2025 is trying to do to workforce protections for folks in the disability community, because I guarantee you, every single one of us knows and loves somebody that has special needs or that is disabled, and we need to do right by every single person in our community, meeting folks exactly where they are. That is an American value. It is a Wisconsin value. And I'm so glad I've got Mia here to help us better understand the threat that's posed by Project. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to take care of some business, and we'll be right back. Keep it locked.
Do I stay or run away?
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
This is an important announcement for Wisconsinites who plan to vote in the November 2024 election. Leading nonpartisan economists have analyzed the economic plans of Donald Trump and concluded that he would cause inflation to rise and the economy to slow. And 16 Nobel Prize-winning economists wrote a letter warning that Donald Trump would reignite inflation with his fiscally irresponsible budgets. Donald Trump's tariff plan would act as a national sales tax, costing the average family as much as $4,000 per year. But Vice President Kamala Harris's plan would help middle-class families deal with rising costs. In her first 100 days, Kamala Harris would pass a ban on price gouging at the grocery store. And as vice president, she worked to cap the cost of many prescription drugs, including insulin, saving many families thousands of dollars per year. On the economy, the choice is clear. Vote Kamala Harris for president. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Action, www.abwt-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Each and every one of you are standing in the watchtower. If you want to save democracy, that means getting involved in democracy. Be sure you rock your vote before November 5th. You can do it on November 5th, but I like getting it out of the way. I did that today. I got one less thing to worry about. It all matters. It especially matters if you or someone you love in your friend circle, in your community, in your faith groups, in your family, is someone with special needs or is disabled. Because what Donald Trump and the Republicans promised to do with the entire system of laws in this country that are designed to ensure that people with special needs and disabled folks get to participate fully in every aspect of family, community, political, and economic life, they plan to dismantle all of that. My special guest, her name is Mia Ives-Ruble. She's the Senior Director for Disability Justice at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She's helping explain what this would mean for all of our families and communities. Thanks again very much, Mia. It's great to have you with us. Let's talk a little bit about what Project 2025 proposes to do to effectively eliminate workplace protections for disabled folks. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I want to talk about two different points. One point is just the basic protections for disabled people to be able to work. That's one part. And then the second part is their ability to actually work. Mm. So the programs that are sort of facilitating the individual's ability to work is the second section that is impacted. And so let's talk about the first part, which is the one that most people are familiar with, which is the EEOC that ensures that individuals aren't discriminated against. That's where you file any workplace complaints if you're not, you know, just in general.
Yes.
And what it does is that it eliminates the ability for the EEOC to, one, be able to see, to collect data on workplace discrimination and issues in the workplace from disabled people. So that's one, and includes other areas as well, race, gender, et cetera. But it also impacts, you know, the disability, whether you identify as disabled. And how that impacts people is that this is how the EEOC decides to do specific complaint processes and prioritizing specific issues that disabled people are facing. So it eliminates the ability for EEOC to track where the harms are. And then two, it eliminates the ability for EEOC to do consent decrees, which are the basic structure that the EEOC is able to ensure that companies do better around, you know, improve their workplace policies so that they aren't discriminating against disabled people.
So just to summarize and to help explain in lay language, what Project 2025 proposes to do is eliminate the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's ability to collect demographic data, to require especially larger employers to produce demographic data. This makes it impossible to analyze the data for potential discrimination occurring in especially our largest employers. Then it proposes to take away the very legal tool that enables the EEOC to monitor compliance with anti-discrimination laws after an employer has been found either liable for discrimination or there's it can be a settlement in lieu of full litigation. But it's the tool when there's a lot of facts that show that an employer has either per se discriminated or is engaging in patterns that are likely to give rise to per se unconstitutional discrimination. So it takes away the ability to diagnose the problem, and then it takes away the ability for the EEOC to do something about the problem on more than a one-off basis. It literally guts the entire regulatory system that is envisioned to help ensure people have access to a full economic life and participation in the workforce. Am I overstating that, Mia? Because that's what I thought when I read it. It was like, it sounds wonky and in the weeds, but it ain't. It's all the marbles.
Yes. And I will also add that there's a separate part within Project 2025 that talks about disparate impact.
Yes.
Now, disparate impact basically states that something that may be unintentional, because we can't prove intentionality in the ways that
Because people don't
even
write,
even if it's unintentional.
Yeah, they don't write emails that say, let's engage in discrimination. They don't do that.
Usually. Sometimes they do, but usually.
Yes.
Yes. So if we are not able to prove that it was intentional, but it has impacted that community, it basically states that the government can't utilize that to fix problems around discrimination of a specific community, including the disability community. And I will say a large part of discrimination against disabled people is unintentional. A lot of times people don't understand disability, don't know how to accommodate them. And so sometimes there is an unintentional discrimination that occurs, but that totally takes away the ability to make any fixes.
Yes.
Towards that.
Folks, we've got to leave it here. Mia, I could talk with you for hours about this. Thank you on a very personal level for all of your advocacy and tireless work on behalf of the disabled community, which, make no mistake, is on behalf of every single one of us and all of our families. You are truly a hero. Her name is Mia Ayvaz-Ruble, the Senior Director of the Disability Justice Initiative at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. When we come back after the top of the hour, it's time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I've got Karen Stewart. Dr. Karen Seal Stewart is a retired business professor, real estate broker, registered investment advisor. We're going to dig in about tax breaks for the very wealthiest on this episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. Keep it locked.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for matinee on air.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as our What Makes Wisconsin Great tour finds us in Viroqua, Wisconsin, with Trigvi Olsen and Reed Galen. Come on downtown Viroqua and join us on the air.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Todd Alba joins us. Hey, Todd.
We're here in front of the Bonham Theater to talk entertainment. Todd forgot his battery pack. We are running off of Todd's truck engine.
I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but if your travel budget got cut, I'm just wondering if it coincided. All of a sudden, I got like a 10 grand a week per diem. I don't know if that is related.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.